This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. It's Thursday, February 8th. I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated. We're joined by John Bryce of Football Scoop and Irish Illustrated, and of course, Pete Sampson from The Athletic. Lots to talk about here in early February. We're going to talk about some possible coaching movement, some decommitments. But first, let's talk about the interviews that, and I gave a shout out in today's Thursday Thoughts, not published yet, but I mean, Notre Dame with Marcus Freeman and the, and his people, his staff that brings us all together. I mean, we're almost getting spoiled now. What a great opportunity to meet these early entry freshmen and grad transfers, Lauren Lando. I think it's pretty great, but let's start there. And everybody, I think, wants to know on the outside who we were impressed with in the interview situation, the interview room. Who impressed you guys?
Well, I wrote about it Monday, Tim, that they should have always been doing this. And you're right. Credit to Marcus, Ellen Wasilewski, Katie Lonergan, Claire Kramer for putting them out. Kramer. Because they could have been doing this forever. Notre Dame's freshmen were also wonderfully well-spoken and interesting back in 2015 and 2010 and 2005 and a lot of those things. So it's great to have them. It gives us much better insight. Riley Leonard's the obvious answer, but I don't think that's what people are looking for. If you haven't seen Riley Leonard's interviews, I think you should all read about Riley Leonard or watch him talk, because it is as enjoyable as it gets just from a human being standpoint. I was surprised that they let Kedron Young play high school football last year as a 25-year-old. So that was weird for me when I first met him. That's good news for Irish fans. He is game ready in terms of his body. Would you guys agree?
Sure. I don't know that I was as blown away as you were, but no doubt about it. He's a freshman. He's put together really well. He's a big back with some pop. And I really didn't get a chance to spend much time around him. The one bad thing about this is that you don't have an opportunity to spend all the time that you want with each individual. But hey, that's.
Yeah, you get about four or five if you have a meaningful conversation.
That's but I mean, there's no other way for Notre Dame to do it without really elongating these interviews. I think they do a sensational job. And again, I want to shout out to all those people because they've done a great job for us. Pete, I know that you spent a lot of time with Lauren Lando. I tried to peek in on that a little bit. What were some of your thoughts about his comments?
I mean, I think he sort of cuts against the grain for your stereotypical strength coach. Which, you know, Marcus Freeman wanted. So I think you could see sort of a truth in, not truth in advertising, but like, this is sort of the guy that, or the kind of guy that Freeman wanted from the get-go. So it was interesting to sort of hear him talk through some of his training philosophies. I think sort of the broad base working, whether that is Olympic gymnasts or UFC fighters or MLB or NFL teams, I think that will all serve not just Notre Dame football, but like Notre Dame big picture well. You know, I am interested to sort of see how his personality fits with maybe some of the younger players who maybe need more of a kick in the butt, because I think he comes in with more of a professional approach, which means that the players need to also be a little bit more professional. So that's sort of something kind of interesting down the road. But, you know, when he talks about, you know, having a plan for the team, but then a plan for the quarterback room and then a plan for the individual quarterbacks, that all is sort of what Freeman was really looking for. You know, talking to Brady Quinn about his experience with Lando was interesting too. It sort of filled in some gaps about, you know, what he's actually like. And Quinn said he's the best guy he's ever worked with.
John Bryce. Yeah.
I like Pete, I spent a lot of time with Lauren Lando. I found him very interesting. Interesting that he said this made perfect timing for him because he and his wife were about to be empty nesters. He's still got his gyms going in the Denver area. They're still very successful. I liked his approach. Pete asked a great question. If it was more construction work, so to speak, of the athlete at the collegiate level and maintenance work of the athlete at the NFL level. And Lauren assented to that. I think has gained some instant credibility with this team from the work that he's done already, the people that he's trained. I do think that his diversity in training background is going to help Notre Dame potentially pull the most out of each individual football player. And, you know, collectively we'll see how he continues to mold the team from like a camaraderie standpoint. That was one thing that, that Matt Bayless excelled at, and that's what we'll see Lauren put his fingerprints on. And then, you know, a couple of names that you added to the board, I believe, Tim, that he has officially hired on staff are Travis Duffel and then Rich Guaraccio. Duffel is Lando's pulse. He's been with him consecutively for about 9 years. Guaraccio has big-time Power 5 experience in the SEC at both LSU and South Carolina, I believe, and then also an extended run at Washington State. Then really enjoyed talking with Eric Goins, the elder statesman kicker, who noted something that I found very interesting. His former strength coach at the Citadel, I think last name, it's a Cajun last name, maybe like Boucher, seriously. He and Lauren Lando are really close friends, and so he said that it's been very much of the same, just maybe unbelievable facilities as he's transitioned from the Citadel to training at Notre Dame.
I really enjoyed talking with Chris Mitchell. You know, when you know, a lot of times you talk to a guy and then you read the written word and it's interpreted a little bit differently. I think if you read the written word of Chris Mitchell, it sounds kind of boastful, but it really doesn't come off that way. He's just a kid that's got a lot of confidence in his ability. He's excited about his opportunity to play at Notre Dame and play at this level. And I got good feelings about him. I did in watching his film, and I feel even better having spoken with him. I like Micah Gilbert. I talk about physical maturity, which he certainly has. He has maturity in general. I really like that kid. I don't know how much opportunity there will be because the receiver room is a little bit more crowded than it was. But again, if you have a couple injuries, or look, if he's good, would any of those young receivers, if they're good, they'll get an opportunity. They'll find their way to the field. Tim, you were Anthony Knapp was a guy that I think you were impressed with.
Yeah, and I just want to piggyback really what you said about Micah Gilbert's opportunity. You have hit the nail on the head of what Notre Dame wants in its wide receiver room. Right. I don't know if their good freshmen will get an immediate opportunity, because that's exactly what you're supposed to do as a playoff program, is not know if you need them or not. I hope Anthony Knapp becomes a very good, I believe, starting center for Notre Dame, because the way he talked, because everybody's going to love listening to Anthony Knapp talk. He's fun, and it's not, it's kind of like, you could tell you that he is going to be a popular person with the team just because he's fun to talk to. It's one of those situations. Like I just kind of mentioned, I used to work in Roswell where he's from, and he was like amazed by the situation. Like, really? Like it was just a really fun conversation with a young developing player. You bring up Lauren Lando. He's going to be reshaping Anthony Knapp over these next couple years. But Knapp mentioned right away, I asked him who he leans on. And he said Ashton Craig is who he works with. And then he said he's working center and right tackle. And he just looks like a future center. Obviously, I'm jumping the gun.
I don't know how good Peter Jones is going to be. We've heard mixed reactions to that. That dude's put together, though.
There
is no doubt about that. And I want to say this, and I know I'll say it again out of frustration, but this notion of seeing a 2-minute clip of Notre Dame in the weight room and determining whether the strength and conditioning coach is going to be really good or he doesn't have the right motivation is absolute nonsense. If you've ever worked out in a weight room with other athletes, there's plenty of motivation going on in that space. You're motivated by your teammates. You've got other assistant coaches. I do want to point out, a lot of people asked about Fred Hale. Fred Hale was retained by Lauren Lando. Man, what's the other guy that you know, the other guy that he retained, JB?
I don't have his name on the tip of my tongue. I did double check though that former Citadel strength coach, and I was correct. It was, his name is Donnell Boucher. So I wasn't lying with the Bobby Boucher.
Bobby Boucher's cousin.
Reference. Yeah. It is Donnell Boucher that Eric Goins said he trained under Citadel, and Donnell Boucher and Lauren Lando are very tight and deploy similar tactics.
Is he an H2O specialist as well?
He got a lot in his medulla oblongata.
Okay. All right. Moving on, we expect, Owen Strebig, we expect the offensive tackle to be verbally committing here today. I think there'll be plenty of news on that. CJ May, decommitment from Notre Dame, maybe part decommitment, part, hey, if you're going to be shopping around, we don't want you to be committed type of thing. I don't want, again, here's one of the stereotypes. Immediately, it's like, oh, well, he's not that good. He's got a pretty decent ceiling. And that's a loss. I don't care any way you cut it, whether it was his decision, Notre Dame's combination, whatever, it's a loss. Now, I will make the trade if you'll give me Damian Shanklin. I think Notre Dame will be just fine. But look, with the camaraderie that Notre Dame has going on right now within their program, if you're going to keep looking and keep visiting, then you can't be committed to Notre Dame anymore.
Yeah, and look, it was always going to be a tough pull to hang on to CJ May in a lot of ways, very similar with Keon Keeley. I think that Auburn has risen to the absolute forefront for CJ May. Be fairly surprised if that isn't where he ultimately ends up committing once again. He's a really fine player. I talked with an SEC assistant coach about him just within the last 2 weeks, and he'd seen him for a while and thought he might be the best player in the state of Alabama.
Yeah, it's not Keon Keeley, not even close to Keon Keeley, but it's somebody that you'd rather have in your class than not have in your class. And so that's a setback. But like, as Priester said, like, if you can go Shanklin for May, somebody a little bit more in state, probably a little bit more easier fit for you at Notre Dame. You know, we've talked, you know, kids from Indiana typically do pretty well up here. So that would be, I think it'd be a trade you'd be okay with if you're Notre Dame.
Sure, a trade you make, but I still think of it as free agent signings at that position. Both is the answer, because
yes.
That is the answer for Alabama, yes, and Georgia and Ohio State. So it's got to be the answer for Notre Dame. But I think the loss, though, even with the trade, is when you say, you know, it is a loss. But it's especially a loss because it's not an easy position for Notre Dame to recruit successfully, consistently. You could go find edge rushers of the last 6 years at Notre Dame. They've done a great job with some of those guys. They're in the pros, and they're going to keep going the pros. But it's not a factor of it. If you say, well, they lost a guard, the top guard prospect in their class, but they'd have three other guys they could bring in. That's why I think it's more of a loss when it's the edge rusher situation.
Yeah. Well, it's not an either or situation. You don't, like, you can't say, oh, hey, we're going to get one night. But Damian Shanklin,
QB is the either or situation, basically, that's left over. Yeah. It's quarterback and tight end in some ways, I guess. Yeah,
Damian Shanklin's ceiling is extremely high. Tom Loy and Steve Wilfong have, right? I think they both have a crystal ball on Shanklin going to Notre Dame, and I'm all in on that. We want to wrap up this segment. I hinted at it at the beginning, but you know, we know about L. Washington and Boston College, head coaching candidate, defensive coordinator candidate. What's real there? There could still be some other activity with Notre Dame's coaching staff, which shouldn't be a surprise because it's still that time of year. It's still pre-Super Bowl.
Yep.
Everything will hit the fan post-Super Bowl, I guess. But John, why don't you lend some insight into the L. Washington situation, as well as a couple other coaches. We've talked about Chris O'Leary before. He was in demand last year by the Ravens. We've talked about the Chargers as a possibility. JB, go.
Yeah. Well, kudos to Al Washington really for advancing through this process, because there've been a number of sitting head coaches. Boston College talked with Paul Christ. Obviously Bill O'Brien is right there in the mix. And ultimately I expect this to be Bill O'Brien's job, but Al Washington isn't the only BC alum that was interviewed in this process. They interviewed Clemson's secondary coach. I forget his name. It might be Mike Reed. He's also a former player. He has not advanced along the way that Al Washington has in this process. I don't really think Al is is at the top of Bill O'Brien's list to potentially be defensive coordinator at Boston College. However, I do think Bill O'Brien has his eyes on another valuable member of Notre Dame's staff, and that's Max Bulla. He and Bill O'Brien have past relationships from the NFL, and as well as both being at the University of Alabama together. If Bill O'Brien ultimately gets the Boston College job as expected, then I think he will seek to hire Max Bulla, who's by all accounts and everyone I've talked to in the football program here at Notre Dame, done a fabulous job working with Notre Dame's linebackers, been really, really valuable. A lot of people believe he's got a wide open runway ahead of him as a really fine collegiate defensive football coach. So I do think that either way, there's going to be some impact to Notre Dame's defensive coaching staff as this Boston College search wraps up. And then Chris O'Leary, no secret that he's been on the Chargers radar, and the Chargers continue to not really take no for an answer from Chris O'Leary. And it's not just the lure of the NFL, but Jesse Minter is an incredibly close friend of Chris O'Leary, and their time together goes all the way back to when they were both on staff at Georgia State. So I would continue to monitor that situation incredibly closely.
You know, I have two thoughts on this. Chris O'Leary, I feel like we talk about the safety room so much, like that not being necessarily always up to par with the players. The safety room plays pretty well. He turned DJ Brown into a viable player as a corner. Ramon Henderson into a guy that helped them as a corner to a safety. Xavier Watts into the, what we know of Xavier Watts right now, the defensive player of the year. I mean, that's a lot of that has to go to Chris O'Leary.
He's a damn good coach.
He deserves some respect. I mean, now
that's
you just
why
need
the NFL's to be interested in him every year.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it'd be great to just keep getting Kyle Hamilton for Chris O'Leary, but he's developing players that you never would have thought would have been good safeties. There's three of them right there could have been total busts at Notre Dame. He developed into 2-year starter, player of the year, and a good backup in Ramon Henderson.
Yeah, very good developmental coach. I think that's been it was sort of skewed at the beginning because you're like, it's like your tight ends coach at Notre Dame, and you're like, well, you developed Michael Mayer, congratulations. Like that's how I felt with Kyle Hamilton. You're like, all right, let's just see a little bit more here. But then you see Watts, Brown. I mean, try to think, you know, when Hamilton gets hurt and Brown has to start the back half of that season, like did a pretty good job, I thought.
He did.
So yeah, I mean, I think he's gotten a lot out of the material on hand. And that's a real credit to him. I mean, as somebody who just takes what he has and maximizes it, I mean, that's much more of the NFL resume, right? Like you don't need to be a great recruiter in the NFL.
Yeah.
You got to be a great coach. And I think Chris O'Leary is pretty much right there as a great coach.
I would just think O'Leary should hold out and try to get the safeties job at Baltimore someday, because that is a fun job in the NFL right now.
Yeah.
Well, trust me, Kyle Hamilton tried to help facilitate that a year ago at this time.
You know, and I think we all thought that James Laurinaitis had a great future as a linebackers coach. But then you watch Max Bulla coach and listen to him coach, and he's big time. That would be a loss for Notre Dame. It's unfortunate, but you can't keep assistant coaches to assistants in the program very long. Real quick to wrap it up, we are already getting questions about, well, if Al Washington's gone, who would replace him? It's a little hard to get to that level before we know what Al Washington's going to do. Some of the names thrown out, Pat Koontz, I don't like that. I love Pat Koontz, but I don't think Pat Koontz is right for the Notre Dame defensive line job. Larry Black's a guy that everybody loved at Notre Dame when he was here. He's at Vanderbilt. Tyler Stockton just went to. I mean, these are familiar.
Yeah, Tyler Stockton's had too many promotions recently, yeah, probably.
He's at Boise State now. These are Notre Dame names. It's not going outside of that, but I got to believe that Larry Black would probably do a really good job at Notre Dame. He wanted to be at Notre Dame as a full-time guy. I'm just throwing that name out there without any real insight. First of all, whether Al Washington's going to be around. I think it's a long shot. It's definitely a long shot that Al Washington's the head coach at Boston College. And I think it's still a bit of a long shot that he's DC at Boston College as well.
I think it's probably would behoove everyone to look at the Cincinnati staff and see who's there, who was there when Marcus Freeman was there. And maybe they moved on to Wisconsin since. That's Greg Scruggs. Marcus Freeman has a habit of just drinking Luke Fickell's milkshake with coaches. So that'd be a name to compete. That'd be a name to at least keep in mind.
Okay. Sounds good. Coming up, segment two, burning up the boards.
Welcome back to segment two, burning up the boards. Our first question is from Bill V 6118. Tim Priester. I wonder if that's Bill Varner. We can find out. Maybe he'll write back in and ask us. Besides Charles Jagasa, Emil Wagner, Tosh Baker, and incoming freshman Gerby Lambert, are there any other possibilities for the two tackle spots? And how do you see things playing out if you had to guess? And we would be guessing right now.
I got to say, believe it or not, Billy Varner's name is in today's Thursday Thoughts.
Wow. Right? That's a weird thing.
Unbelievable.
That's a strange thing.
That's not why I chose that. But besides Charles Jagasa, Emil Wagner, Tosh Baker, and Gerby Lambert, do they need somebody else?
I mean, I think those are the four,
I think those are I realize that there's not a lot of playing experience there, but I think those are the guys that you want to choose from. Every one of those guys was a desired recruit when Notre Dame landed them, and they're still desired. Emil Wagner, I think, is still a strong candidate. Tosh Baker, I recent conversations with Harry Hiestand, by the way, he has a lot of confidence in Tosh Baker emerging. I don't know if Gerby Lambert's going to be ready for that. Jagasa, I've talked about being more of a right tackle or guard, but he wasn't even close to being in the kind of physical condition that he's likely to be in August if he doesn't have any kind of setbacks along the way. So, keep in mind, Will Black's coming in next year, and we expect Owen Strebig and Jack Lang to come in as well. So the offensive tackle situation is going to change, but give me those four to work with this year. Would you like you'd like an experienced grad transfer left tackle? That would be great, but those are pretty good candidates from which to choose.
Yeah, I'm curious to see the spring for Sullivan Absher. There's a lot of people in the program that really like him, and he was certainly an incredibly highly rated recruit that Notre Dame was extremely excited to get committed in the program. He's got good size, 6'7". I think they like his arm length as well, so it's an important spring for him. He's had a year in college football, a year in training for college football. He played briefly in the Sun Bowl near the end there against Oregon State, so he got just a taste of collegiate experience there going into winter conditioning. So he's a guy, a consensus four-star player, was rated very highly at the offensive line position. So that's a guy I'm curious to watch because he does have such natural size.
Thanks for pointing him out, John. I was remiss in not mentioning him. And I did like what I saw of him, the brief glimpses that we had last year as well.
It's four candidates, five candidates. That's, unless you're going to go in the portal, which Notre Dame has monitored, that's a healthy spot to be. I mean, not every position is going to be fourth and fifth year seniors, although Notre Dame's entire defense seems like it is. Tackle is just one of those spots that's not right now.
If Notre Dame's offensive tackles were fourth year seniors, as their defense is right now, they would be ranked number three in the country going into the season. That's
a good point, Tim.
And to the transfer portal, I'll be a broken record here and point out there's still one more out there. There's still one more window when a lot of guys are going to go through spring camp everywhere and realize we're going to take a fresh start and head somewhere new in the summer. So that April 15 to April 30 portal will still be a time frame to watch for Notre Dame in any potential roster attrition and enhancement at that time.
I know these names don't sound amazing now, but imagine imagine before they left, 6 months before they left, if I said, that spring portal is going to knock out Tyler Buchner, Lorenzo Styles, Prince Kali, and Logan Diggs from Notre Dame's team. Fans would have died. Yeah. Those four names at one point in one class were as big as you could get from class.
Kind of like the exodus of the wide receivers, right?
Great point.
After the exodus of Chancey Stuckey. And where are they now? I mean, I think wide receiver has a chance to be a strength. Overreacting.
But I mean, I think all four of us, if you said before the 2022 season started, but none of these guys are going to be here in 2023. Collie, Styles, Buchner, and Diggs.
Yeah, you'd be like, what?
That would be shocking.
Would you be? You not to hijack. You would have been surprised by that?
No, not surprised they left. How bad of a
reaction to it. Yeah.
Logan Dick, Lorenzo Styles was the number one receiver going into the year that year. Logan Diggs was easily 1A to estimate 1B because he was the guy coming back. Prince Kali was everyone's new guy. And then Tyler Buchner was your starting quarterback.
Okay. All right. You're saying before the season. Okay.
I'm saying before that year began when you saw the warts. And you think that is a shocker. And that's what you're going to be looking at every year.
All right.
Question from DMB346. Looking at the defensive line without Gabe Rubio, we only have two players that are over 300 pounds. And one of them is freshman Sean Sevillano. Do you think this is a recruiting problem, a problem of the now former strength and conditioning program, or just plain bad luck with Notre Dame's defensive tackle signees over the last few years?
I mean, it's not a problem of the now former strength and conditioning program because some of the bodies aren't meant for that frame. Howard Cross wasn't going to be that size guy. It could be who you target in recruiting. Like Howard Cross, six years ago now, Howard Cross, Tim Priester always had him going to defensive tackle. He ended up being the nose for various reasons in Golden and Elston and Washington's defense. He was a strong side defensive end size when they recruited him, right? I mean, I think it's targeting the recruiting and getting some bad luck with defensive tackle signees over the years.
Yeah, it's difficult to be over 300 pounds if you're shorter than 6'3".
Yeah.
I think they just have some shorter defensive tackles. You just don't carry as much weight as you would otherwise. You know, Jason Anye is 6'5", but like kind of still a leaner, like look more like an athlete than like a pure defensive tackle.
I agree.
So I don't, I guess I just don't see this as a problem exactly, but it just, those are the body types they've recruited. I think they're trying to recruit a little bit more length. And if you recruit more length, that there's more weight you can put on there. That they've been pretty intentional about that.
And I would say just quickly, I mean, look, much like right now, Ohio State wide receiver recruiting has basically been unparalleled by anyone else in college football for the last 3 or 4 years. Right now, Georgia and Alabama, from a defensive tackle standpoint, are pretty freaking hard to beat out for guys if they really prioritize them, not only because of the on-field success for those two programs, but look how many interior defensive linemen they both have in the NFL right now. So I don't think it's a deficiency. I think it's a byproduct of the landscape right now, and guys want to go to those two schools because they're churning out top level NFL players left and right, the same as Ohio State has put and been the best wide receiver core in college football for several years.
We use 300 as the measuring stick, but that's just because it's a round number. I mean, why can't it be 295? Why can't it be 290?
I think DMB's issue is that Georgia and Alabama is 330 and they move like they're 290.
I get that. Yeah. I get and Notre Dame's probably never going to quite recruit to that level as Georgia and Alabama do. And I get that. Not very concerned about the interior defensive line with Mills and Cross coming back. And I do think that Anya can play, you know, in the low to maybe 295 range. I'm still really bullish on him. I think there's a lot there. I love his length. But, you know, point taken, as you say, Tim, about Georgia and, you know, the Heinisches of the world and, you know, Devin Houston, those guys.
Bring that name up a lot.
Brennan Vernon's a guy that we expect to convert or to move from strong side end to defensive tackle, you know, probably in the 275 range or something along there. Point taken. But let's see what the body types look like when it really matters, which is 8 months from now.
Next question from Hayden Adams Z. Was Riley Mills or Xavier Watts last year's Asmar Bilal Javon McKinley Award winner? Who are your top candidates for 2024? I want to hijack it by saying Riley Mills was always ascending. That's the opposite of Bilal and McKinley. So we're looking for fifth year guys that come out of that. You're like, that guy can't play. And then all of a sudden you're like, wow, that guy's good. That's
not an exact comparison, but John and P, you guys jump in.
Yeah. I mean, first O'Malley's right. Like the nature of that award Watson, Mills would not qualify for that. You know, for Bilal McKinley, it's like kind of a journeyman who, you know, then turns it on at the very end. So, I mean, the entire, I think Botello actually would still qualify for this position. You know, because he's been okay. You know, but if you took bowl games out of it, I'm not sure that you could really point to a whole lot that's been like sustainable there. So, Botello would be my number one candidate for that. I know that we like Jaden Thomas, but like between injuries and bad quarterback play, he doesn't have a ton of production. If he had a really good year, I think he could be sort of in this group as well.
Can I go Tosh Baker here? Like, I don't really know the rules of this, but
that is Tosh the rule. You just defined
that would be a Tosh Baker would be straight Asmer Bilal. I mean, has almost not played at all in 4 years.
Tosh Baker would be my pick. I feel like he's been in South Bend longer than I have, and I've lived here 6 years now. So, you know, Tosh Baker.
Howard Cross has been here longer than you, possibly.
Tosh Baker would be. I mean, I like Botello. Tosh Baker would absolutely be my guy. And then, you know, Kevin Ballman, if he comes back healthy and is a significant contributor, you know, I like his makeup. I like the way he plays football. He just hasn't been able to stay healthy.
Yeah, Tosh Baker was my choice. I think that's a good pick by you, JB. I don't know. Again, not an exact Bilal McKinley comparison, but they sure could use Jaden Mickey to take a massive step up. Again, not the same kind of category as Tosh Baker, but that's a guy you'd really like to see take a significant step forward. They need it. You know, I mean, you just don't know. You've got Ben Morrison on one side, and it's kind of like a security blanket. Well, what if he has a, you know, what if he gets nicked up in September? Well, now you got to dig a little bit deeper, and a couple guys have to really emerge there. But Harry Hestand's a guy that has a lot of faith in Tosh Baker, just in a conversation, and so that's good enough for me.
We did skip one, Tim. I'll drop back here for a quick answer on it. ND Dan 106. We've seen ND step up with coaching salaries and contracts. Is this a product of the new apparel and TV contracts? Or the administration finagling/adjusting to the market of college football coaches?
Guys,
I hadn't even noticed that question. So penalties to me for not more closely reading Tim Priester's morning homework. But I think it's the administration. I think it's the administration doing everything in its power to position Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame football for long-term sustained success. And also, again, think you can't pay lip service in the marketplace right now. Too many coaches are being paid very well throughout college football. Too many coaches are trying like hell to get into NFL football because college has become harder than ever before as a place to coach because of roster demands, NIL, transfer portal, all of that. So, again, I hadn't noticed that question, but I'm glad that you went back to it, TP, because I want to point out, again, the Notre Dame now going into this 24 season is going to have a top five paid offensive coordinator, a top five paid defensive coordinator, and a top five paid strength coach. That's not to say they're not competitive in some other areas. They're on the lower end of the spectrum on a couple of specific assistant coaching salaries. But right there at arguably the three most crucial assistant positions in the program under Marcus Freeman, OC, DC, and strength coach, Notre Dame is top five in the country in all three.
Yeah, I mean, that's not arguable. Those are the three most important assistant coaching positions.
I wanted to argue with you, Pete.
No, there's no argument, John. We'll argue about not arguing.
Brian Kelly told us this in 2009. They're the three most important positions.
I had a question in my mailbag this week. Somebody was concerned that Notre Dame was dropping the ball potentially on Marcus Freeman's contract extension because there was interest or not in Alabama. And I was like, if Notre Dame wanted to really support Marcus Freeman, they would do it with pay at OC, DC, and strength coach, not his own contract. Like this is how you support a head coach, not giving him a contract extension earlier after 2 years. So Notre Dame is paying a lot for those positions. I know that there are people in the admin who look at it and be like, man, this is getting expensive, but this is what it takes in 2024 for college football, and Notre Dame is swallowing hard and doing it.
Yeah, and to your point there, quickly, Pete, on Alabama, look, Texas A&M probably kicked its tires on Marcus Freeman. Alabama, that was the non-entity.
To wrap up this question, and we've had questions from people about, I think probably last week, about Pete Bavakwa, difference, how are things going to be different? I think that's a man in charge that's going to continue to push for spending in these areas, and that will make Notre Dame fans a lot happier. Where are we, Tim?
We're at System Man 1671-51. Does anybody else look at that and see Joe Montana, Keith Von Horst, and Dick Butkus like I do? Because that's where my name, my face always was.
Oh, wow.
Really, really weird guy. Over under 25% chance. Rocket Ishmael percent chance. Steve Angeli is the starter in week one. I'll under. Just say under and recuse myself from the rest of this conversation.
Under. Everybody's under. Saying under, I bet.
Yeah, under. Next question.
I understand that Steve Angeli played great in the bowl game. I thought it was impressive. I thought it was noteworthy. And I think it's important that he sticks around and is the starting quarterback in 25 and 26 until CJ Carr has enough time in the weight room to be prepared to play at this level. But come on, man, this is the real world of college football. Now you can't spend all that money on a 6'4" athletic quarterback in Duke and expect there to be an open competition. It's just not realistic.
Yeah. It's whatever the percentages are of Riley Leonard picking up an injury in training camp.
Right. There's an over 25% chance in my mind because of injuries and how Leonard plays so aggressively that Steve Angeli has to start a game for Notre Dame.
I 100% agree on that.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I think it's really, really important that Notre Dame emphasizes to Angeli that you're the starter in 2025. And you know, if something happens to Riley Leonard, of course you go in 2024, but this is the world we live in now. And that's a misappropriation of funds.
Yes. General manager. You got to fire manager if that happens.
Yeah. You can't do that.
Financial stewardship is now a part of running a college football program.
There you go.
But yeah, Steve Angeli, I think would be there to start and it's paramount to retain him. I wouldn't guarantee he would be the starter in 25, but you want to hold on to him. You keep him for 24 and you tell him it's absolutely an open competition going into January of 25.
Yeah, and I'd probably tell him you're probably the leader, just even if he's not, because you got to keep him. That's also part of college football now.
Why?
We want you on our team as long as possible. So I'm going to tell you this.
Taking the truth and stretching it as far as
possible. Yeah, just stretch the truth a little bit. It's fine. Right.
But I think it's important that he stays. Coach Aguilar asked, what would you attribute the recent success in safety recruiting? Second part, do you see the same level of improvement in defensive tackle recruiting in this class?
I think the safety is twofold. I think having Kyle Hamilton is a huge asset because guys are looking at where players are from in the NFL, and Kyle Hamilton is a great ambassador for Notre Dame that Notre Dame Social. Kevin and Katie and those folks do a great job of continually highlighting Notre Dame former Notre Dame players through the Notre Dame Twitter account. I think Chris O'Leary is a part of that, and I think Marcus Freeman and Chad Bowden are huge elements in that because they prioritized it, especially Marcus Freeman.
You watch the NFL season this year, you'd probably say especially the playoffs too. You had to name five people as a casual fan that watch playoffs. You'd say Mahomes, Kelsey, Lamar Jackson for the wrong reason, Kyle Hamilton, and Christian McCaffrey, and Brock Purdy, I guess, because he's all over the news now. But if you just watched them play and didn't know the story, Kyle Hamilton's like the third guy. I said he was the third best player on the field in that game, and the other two are in the Hall of Fame the second they retire. Well, 5 years after they retire.
Yeah, and Kyle Hamilton was just dazzling in the Pro Bowl for anybody desperate enough to watch flag football.
And Xavier Watts, Xavier Watts is the defensive player of the year at safety. I mean, yeah, that's Xavier Watts helps.
Okay. Yeah. I was just going to add him. I mean, he's a defensive player of the year. You're coaching, you're recruiting at Notre Dame, and you say, see Harrison Smith, he's going to the Hall of Fame. See Kyle Hamilton, he's on the path to do that. See Julian Love, converted to safety, all pro selection. And oh, by the way, Alohi Gilman just had his best season and is now a starter in the NFL. I don't know if all of those things are contributing to that, but all you have to do is look at the productivity at the safety position, and that certainly isn't hurting Notre Dame's efforts in the recruiting.
The second part of that, I do not see the same level of improvement at DT in recruiting classes, because it's very, very hard for Notre Dame, as you guys pointed out, to win those
bets. Yeah. Yeah, because they're undersized, like ND Dan 106. Wait, was that who that was? No, it was DMB 346.
Yeah, but it's not a lack of emphasis or effort. No. Again, I just go back to the fact it's Georgia and Alabama, the same way that Ohio State basically chooses wide receivers right now.
Yeah. We got a couple of Riley Leonard questions. First from Irish Rhino. Does Riley Leonard have a higher ceiling but lower floor than Sam Hartman? What will have to happen for his ceiling to be reached? And then from Chubby Squirrel, would Riley Leonard have been the pick by Notre Dame if he had 2 years of eligibility instead of one?
I think Riley Leonard has a higher ceiling than Sam Hartman because he's got more natural size than Sam Hartman. And as we continue to watch college football evolve, we're seeing it be more and more imperative that guys can do stuff with their wheels. And I think Riley Leonard can do that. And again, I'll go back to some coaches that I talked to for that story that I did for us right at the first of the year, whenever it was, scouting Riley Leonard from the ACC. And so many coaches, one of the first things they said to me about Riley Leonard was, that guy is an athlete. And one coach specifically had gone to watch him on a recruiting visit and talked to me about a dunk that Riley Leonard had in a basketball game. So I like Riley Leonard's ceiling. I think it's a little bit more than Sam Hartman's ceiling. And I still think he would have been the choice with 2 years instead of one. If you like him well enough to spend a whole bunch of money on him now, why wouldn't you like him well enough to have a potential for a 2 year starter at quarterback, which you've yet to have if you're Marcus Freeman?
Does he have a lower floor? Lower floor, yeah. Pete?
Yeah, he's definitely got a lower floor, and I would like him a lot more with 2 years of eligibility than one. I guess I don't know if I'm misreading the question, but like,
I didn't know how to interpret that.
I think I know what he means exactly. Would Notre Dame bring in Riley Leonard for 2 years because you're definitely chasing off two of your three quarterbacks right now? Yes. And they 100% would, because then you just move on to Deuce Knight and whoever stays.
On the floor part, I mean, Hartman was exactly what he was coming in, going out. And that was a pretty good passer. Leonard really could be all over the place. I appreciated in his interview that he acknowledged, like, sort of like, I've got weaknesses. We all know what they are. And that's as a passer. I talked to Kevin Johns, his quarterback coach OC at Duke. And, you know, it's like you talk to these coaches about their players, they can't help but compliment them because it's just kind of how those interviews go. And he's like, you know, he's developing as a passer. Like he needs work there. And he talked about how his footwork is just not where it needs to be as often as it needs to be. His accuracy is okay. I don't know how much you're going to improve that, but like they need to figure out a way to improve that. So there's a lot of development for Riley Leonard, which is why if you had him for 2 years, I would be even more intrigued by him than I already am at 1 year.
Yeah, I think he changes the offense from the standpoint of the running game, just how you attack the running game. The running backs won't have as many yards because he will be picking some of those up. And Pete, I think that's completely fair to say about him in the passing game. But I like the chances of him showing improvement with Gino Guiduli as the quarterback's coach. Look at how, and again, it could be apples and oranges. I don't know, but look at how Steve Angeli developed last year. We could see already in August and September that Steve Angeli was a much more confident quarterback in what he was doing. He had great knowledge of running the offense, and then it all came together in the bowl game. So I like those chances. The other thing is Leonard is going to have a better receiving core than the one that Sam Hartman had last year. There's just very little doubt about that, especially if, you know, the Jaden Thomases of the world can stay healthy. Jaden Greathouse, instead of being hurt most of the year, can stay healthy. That will assist Riley Leonard.
I have to throw in here, so we're intellectually honest. I never understood the Riley Leonard high draft pick stuff when he was playing well last September because of his passing. Because other guys at the NFL level can run when they chase you defensively. But Al Golden was very worried about Riley Leonard when they were playing Riley Leonard. Like that as a college quarterback weapon, Al Golden was really worried about Riley Leonard. More so than Brennan Armstrong, who everybody worried about at the time too.
Yeah, I think it had to do with, again, his size, Tim, and the NFL drafts on potential. And people continue to see a lot of potential. And had he sustained that over the course of the season, they were going to, you know, look at him next to a Daniel Jones, fair or not, because that's the guy he replaced at Duke. And then they were going to look at him next to some other guys like a Josh Allen. I'm not comparing him. I'm saying from just the way they play the game. So I think that's why, had he sustained that across an entire season with people on their schedule or like a Notre Dame, then I think that's why you saw some of that. I still think that scouts are very intrigued by Riley Leonard.
I absolutely shared Al Golden's opinion about Riley Leonard. I was shooting off flares in June and July about what Riley Leonard might be able to do against Notre Dame. And it does. It starts with the feet because if he can do that, then it opens other things up and with your running backs, your short passing game, your intermediate passing game, et cetera. So, but I agree with what Pete Sampson is saying, and he has a lot to prove with consistency throwing the football. You can see
that's what it's about.
Here and there, where he can wing it. The ball, you know, he's got a nice loose arm, and the ball comes off his hand. But it's just the consistency of accuracy. Having a better receiving core will certainly help there. Question from Not Jay Tafel. One, given the uncertainty with Gabriel Rubio, which young player or players is in the best position to back up Howard Cross?
Rubio is technically Mills' backup. I know that's a weird thing because Rubio is also a defensive tackle like Mills, even though he's the biggest player. Anya backs up Cross. So the next defensive tackle in right now is Donovan Heinisch. And it's not close.
But yeah. I think it's a key spring for Donovan Houston, and I think it's
Devin Houston. Absolutely, yeah.
Devin Houston.
Devin. Sorry, and it's absolutely an imperative spring for Tyson Ford.
Yeah, they need one of those guys. I don't even know what the Javon McKinley, Asmer Bilal equivalent breakout story is for a backup.
Anya.
Anya, I guess. They need, you know, Anya and Heinisch, they need to take huge steps this year.
I think they're going to get a guy in the portal, a Chris Smith type now in April.
Well, that could happen. I don't know that we've gotten any inklings of that. I'm really fascinated to see how big Brennan Vernon will be by August.
Yeah.
And what he can do. Who do I compare him to? What did I say? He has a Bosa.
The Bosas, yeah.
Had a Bosa mindset.
I'm all for it.
I stand by that. I don't think that he has the
he does not have a Chase Young mindset. I'll tell you that.
No, I don't think that he has the physical ability of a Bosa, but I think he's a kind of wired the same way. I think Jason Anya can be good. I really, really do.
I do too.
Yeah, no, I think he can be a quality first guy off the bench on the interior.
I think it's probably time to ask Al, as long as we're asking Al Washington. If not, we'll ask Al Golden. What if Anya has cross-trained enough, could you have Jason Anya be the 1-2 punch behind Mills now? Because he's a nose tackle. Can he easily move to defensive tackle? And do you put in somebody else that knows?
He's got great length for that position. Like an ideal frame and body for that position, the three technique.
Next question is from Gaj 0026. What recruit that is not committed, that ND is recruiting, do you hope they ultimately land in the 25 class? Obviously, do not pick someone Notre Dame cannot take. I am not privy to all the transcripts, but
I've said Damian Shanklin is my first choice.
Yeah, it's a position to need. I'm not going to disagree with TP there.
Yep, that would be, I like Dallas Golden a lot. Maybe he's got a cool name, but super talented too. I mean, they're just, you could, they've come a long way in the secondary with recruiting that they can probably get away with not having him, but defensive linemen, they have not come that far. So they need everybody they can get up front.
Yeah. And they've been in it on,
No, I agree on both. I just want to throw in terms of intrigue, because if we love talking about ceilings when they're 2 years away from playing, is Derek Meadows. The intrigue is pretty high.
And just like they've been so good on Mark Zachary all along and had him to campus so many times. Plus, he's an in-state guy. He's highly regarded. He's one I would have in that mix. Like, I think it's important for Notre Dame to get Mark Zachary.
I agree with all those guys. They're all sensational prospects. Jack Lang. I didn't say him first because I'm assuming that he's going to end up in Notre Dame. I don't know that 100%, but feel confident about that. These are all good football. These are all really good football prospects that Notre Dame has a really good chance of landing at a variety of positions. Let's wrap things up. We're going to talk a little Super Bowl here, past and present, from Irish A2. Outside of Joe Montana. And this is going to be in O'Malley's wheelhouse because there's a couple other 49.
I have an easy one for this one.
Yeah. What is your favorite performance by a Notre Dame player in a Super Bowl? And there hasn't been, I mean, Joe Theismann won a Super Bowl, but he had modest numbers. He was actually intercepted twice in that Super Bowl. Notre Dame players.
He had a really bad Super Bowl.
Really? Well, John Riggins ran for 166 in that game too, but
no, I mean, he had a really bad one the next year.
But I mean, Notre Dame players, there haven't been that many that have really excelled.
I got one that took me 1 second to think of because Ricky Waters, three touchdowns, including down the post from Steve Young against the Chargers is my favorite one behind all of Joe Montana's four.
Interesting. Yeah. It's I had a question in my mailbag about last Super Bowl performance by a Notre Dame player. There was kind of in the vein of Hamilton, Tranquil Banks, Kyron Williams. Like Notre Dame had a little bit Owusu-Koramoah, some buzzier players in the NFL playoffs this year than they usually do.
Yeah.
I was shocked when I started thinking about the last good performance by a Notre Dame frontline player in the Super Bowl. I was like, I do have to Justin Tuck.
Yeah, he was the best player on the field that had Tom Brady and Randy Moss.
It goes back a ways. So,
well, Bettis didn't do much in his Super Bowl.
But Justin Tuck was the best player on a football field that day on a football field with Randy Moss and Tom Brady.
So it's, there's just not a lot of them. I forgot about Ricky Waters entirely, even though I watched that game because it wasn't 55-20.
That Super Bowl was played 2 weeks prior against Dallas. Yeah. So it was,
Stan Humphries being terrible. That's fun.
That 51-yard reception, it was a great throw. He also eluded two tackles to make it a really sensational 51-yarder. Ross Browner had 10 tackles in a losing effort. Mm. Pretty dominant in that game, but that was a long, long time ago.
Mark Bavaro had the touchdown against Denver, and he was the best tight end at the time. So that's that was a good
David one, Gibbons scored in Super Bowls.
Right. That's a good call.
Twice.
That's a trivia question.
I mean, Tux is actually better than Waters. Waters was one of the guys that could have scored 12 touchdowns that day. He scored three, and Tuck was amazing.
Yeah. I couldn't find the last Notre Dame player to start a Super Bowl and was it Ryan Harris in 2015?
I think that might be right because
McGlinchey. McGlinchey.
McGlinchey, yeah.
Oh,
McGlinchey started for the Niners. Skoronek.
My prop bet there was, will he make a catch in the game? And he made one.
Yeah. David Givens, though, I'm glad you brought that up because he scored in two Super Bowls. He scored in two separate Super Bowls.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
That's a great, great trivia question. All right. We're going to wrap it up. Super Bowl predictions. I got to be careful about how I express my opinions here.
Yes, you do.
Explain to the readers what you're saying.
Well, my point was that unless you're a Kansas City fan, you don't want Kansas City to win the Super Bowl again. Don't you want that? The most NFL fans of various teams want it spread out. They don't want a team dominating the Super Bowl.
But your additional point was the 49ers have a little overexposure in the Super Bowls as well. So that's kind of you'd prefer the Ravens Lions type thing right now as a fan.
Without having a rooting interest either way, I thought the Lions would be fun to watch because I think the nation would have kind of rallied around. Everybody loves Dan Campbell, right? I mean, they would kind of rallied around the Lions, but the 49ers are a 1.5 point favorite. The over under is 47.5. Have at it, guys.
I'll go 24-20 Chiefs.
I have a 21-17 San Francisco, and if that hits, then I will take you guys all out to dinner somewhere nice.
Nice. That means you actually have it, like maybe with Tim Murray.
Also, if Drew Tranquil makes the first interception of the game, because I only bet on Notre Dame players from Fort Wayne.
You can take us to dinner, but I'll pick up the tab.
Yeah, all right.
Tim, I know you have a rooting interest here, but I also know that you're an objective.
I would never bet against Patrick Mahomes in a Super Bowl. Brock Purdy is no Jimmy Garoppolo, but he's no Patrick Mahomes either. Can you imagine the difference between like early game nerves between Patrick Mahomes and Brock Purdy right now? Mahomes in his fourth Super Bowl. He's already lost one. He's already won a couple. And then there's Brock Purdy running out there.
Yeah.
I actually like the 49ers. I felt were a much better team than Green Bay and Detroit. I was wrong that they were much better than Detroit because Detroit's really peaking. But I had a bad feeling going into those games that things weren't going right and I thought they could lose. I think I have a feeling the 49ers are going to win, actually. I am not. It's basically handling Chris Jones for me inside and then Mahomes not just being otherworldly. I know Pacheco's battling a couple of injuries. I don't know how much they're I'm praying that's the case because I think I love Isaiah Pacheco. I would take him on my team anytime if Christian McCaffrey wasn't already the running back. I have a feeling they're going to win in that 27-23 range.
Yeah, I'm hopeful as a Chiefs fan. I can't say that I'm optimistic because I think the Niners are the more complete team, and Joe Thuney is not likely to play, and I think that's a significant loss on a Chiefs line that is nice, but not as good as the San Fran line.
Have you guys kept up, Tim and Pete, with the weirdest Super Bowl theme ever of that Steve Wilks, the defensive coordinator, having to show tape of a lack of effort by the some of the players on the 49ers defense the last two games?
I have not.
He literally had to call out players for a lack of running to the ball in the NFC Championship game in Green Bay, specifically Chase Young. If you guys want to Google it, it's
I'm aware that it was said. I haven't seen it.
It's touchdown by Jahmyr Gibbs. Watch Chase Young the whole time. I've never seen a guy try less on a play in a game that mattered in my life.
Wow.
And I don't get it. And I assume he won't do it again because he's in the Super Bowl.
Right? Yeah. You got 2 weeks as a teaching. You won the game and you got 2 weeks teaching tape. Wow. We talk about that all the time. That also plays in to help San Francisco.
Well, as someone that grew up, as someone that remembers every Super Bowl, and remembers going through a long period of time where Super Bowls were totally one-sided.
Well, yeah.
I think that, I think that this should very much be a competitive game. I don't expect it to be one-sided. I hope the 49ers win, but I can't choose against Patrick Mahomes in this situation.
I almost feel like if it's one-sided, the other team's going to come roaring back in the game. They're both capable of coming. Like, obviously, Mahomes could just go nuts if he's behind, and the 49ers are always behind recently.
The Chiefs had to do that to beat San Fran in the last Super Bowl. I mean, they had to come roaring back.
Yeah, Purdy hits that throw that Jimmy G missed for the clincher.
Well, it should be fun. And also, what should be fun is we have spring football coming up in about a month. We're going to continue on our one podcast per week roll here for a little bit. And then when
interviews tomorrow, a whole new group of people.
Interviews are tomorrow. Did we talk about some of the guys that are going to be?
It's the freshman early enrollees you haven't seen, plus RJ Oben, Jordan Clark. I actually just pulled this thing up.
Yeah.
Aeneas Williams was a scratch last week. I assume he'll be in.
The kicker.
Oh, and Kia. Kahanu Kia. That's an interesting one.
We'll be back. Bryce Young, of course. KVA, of course. Urlacher, Logan Thomas. So, yeah, we'll be talking to those guys. We'll share our thoughts on that next week. But until then, Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley, John Bryce, Pete Sampson. This has been Irish Illustrated Insider.